another great show brought to you through the Law of Attraction Radio Network.
The secret to well-being is discovering the power that is your birthright, the power to create a happier, healthier life drawn from our own vast internal resources. Join Jules and her guests as they gently guide you to shift your perspective from the familiar negative to the divinely connected, a place that will not only positively impact your world, but possibly shift the planet. It's all right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful Southern California. And wow, I've got to tell you, it really is beautiful here. In the middle of March, I look out my window. I'm seeing palm trees sway in the wind, and I'm seeing sunshine, and I'm seeing clear blue skies, and wow, I really have created paradise, haven't I? I love it. Tonight we have a really, really incredible show, and so I'm so glad that you could tune in because it's so much insight. We have Anita Morjani with us tonight. She wrote the book, Dying to Be Me, and she's so fantastic. The way this book is put together makes you fully understand everything and the reason why life works as it works. She had an incredible upbringing in Hong Kong, and she was Indian, Hindu. Her life experiences were such that you can understand where she built up the stress in her life. In 2004, she was diagnosed, 2002, she was diagnosed with cancer. In 2004, she had a near-death experience. And then she had a spontaneous remission. The things that she learned is incredible and something that we all need to take note of. Truly, her experience is our blessing because from her, we can really understand the purpose of living. Now, not only am I very impressed with Anita, but so is Dr. Wayne Dyer, for he wrote this incredible foreword for her book. And he's so impressed with her and the story that she tells that he is actually touring with her throughout the United States right now. And so we're very fortunate to have Anita with us today. It's really, I just couldn't be any happier. So I want you to sit back, relax, just get comfortable, because in a few minutes, you're going to gain some great insight that's literally going to impact your life forever. We'll be right back after these.
You are listening to your daily dose of well-being and inspiration on Law of Attraction Radio Network at LOARadionetwork.com. Hear this incredible show on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, which goes through your car stereos with Ford Sync or any auto dashboard that has the internet. Listen to our 24/7 broadcast with our mobile app as well, or just listen through an MP3 player or computer. Remember, LOARadionetwork.com, heard in over 120 countries. Is the radio station for your well-being.
Okay, we are back. You know, truly I want to thank you for taking the time and for joining me, for sharing your energy with me. I just can't thank you enough, and how grateful I am that together we are shifting the consciousness of the entire planet. So I know that I could tell you that I love you, but I really need you to feel it, because truly the only reason I am sitting here behind this camera is because of the love I feel for you. And I honestly want you to understand how magnificent you are. What a blessing to this world you are. Everything about you has led you to this point, to where you are today, and you have touched so many people's lives. I also want to let you know that even though you feel maybe less confident in your abilities or the impact that you've made to other people, now I want to make sure you understand you have touched the lives of many. Just by a simple smile walking down that street, you have accumulated so much good in your life that I can honestly say that you are truly worthy of all of life's good. And it is yours for the taking. You deserve it. You are magnificent. And I'm just so glad that you're here in this world with me right now. I wouldn't have missed this for the world, for anything. And I am especially excited about tonight's show. And I just know that you're going to enjoy it as much as I am. Now, Anita grew up in Hong Kong. She's Hindu. She has a strong family tradition that she was supposed to follow, but she was raised in a Catholic school. So she understands all of this strong independence and where it came from for her as she developed. And that strong independence that we come to love so much was actually something that really she didn't feel comfortable with, and she wished that she could conform. But I'm just so grateful that she didn't. So please help me send wonderful, loving energy to Anita Morjani. Well, welcome, Anita, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I am so thrilled to have you on the show.
Thank you for having me on the show. I'm thrilled to be here.
You know, you've got a very, very special life experience, and I am so happy that you chose to share this with the world. We are really shifting right now, and everything that you wrote in this book is exactly what people need to be hearing. So I'm just so delighted, and I really feel that we're blessed having you here in this world right now.
Wow, thank you. In fact, it's given me so much pleasure to see that people are actually getting something from my experience. It makes it so worthwhile for me to have gone through that cancer and everything I went through.
Absolutely. So to lead everybody into the cancer and then the outcome, of course, in the near-death experience, you go into quite a bit of detail about your life before this so that we can understand exactly where you were coming from. And I thought that was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, thank you. In fact, a couple of people suggested I do that. Initially, I must say that I was a little bit hesitant about giving away so much of my personal life. As you can imagine, it's like sharing, opening up and sharing with the whole world. But one of my friends, in fact, the ones who we're staying with, they said to me that I think you should give a little bit more about your background, because that is so key to leading up to why you believe you got the cancer. And then even my editor said, we've got to put the NDE in the context of your life. So we really need to put some information of your background and your upbringing.
I could fully understand where you were coming from, but let's talk about your background. with so that the listeners can understand, because you really are this terrific independent woman, and yet you're Hindu.
Yeah.
And that you lived in Hong Kong. You've got this incredible life, but you still had to adhere to your family's traditions. So let's start from there. How did that affect you?
It always made me feel that I didn't measure up because I didn't feel that I fit in anywhere. Because I went to a British school, I was constantly trying to fit in with my British friends, but I didn't fit in. I mean, I was a different race, different religion. We had different cultural values. So I felt I didn't quite fit in with them. At home, I was trying to rebel against my parents' cultural values, and I didn't agree with them, so I didn't fit in there. And then I lived in Hong Kong, where the culture is predominantly Chinese, and I just loved their culture because I had a nanny who I was very, very close to, and yet I'm not Chinese, but I spoke the language. And so I never completely fit in anywhere. And I think that set me up to feel from a very young age that in a sense that I wasn't good enough, that I had to keep trying. I had to keep trying harder to be somebody that I'm not.
And you were, your parents were strong believers in arranged marriages.
Yeah, that's very typical of my culture. I mean, it still happens today where the parents arrange the marriage for their offspring, for their children. And even though they do it, I mean, they believe they do it out of a love for their children because they know what's best, and they want their kids to marry people with the same background. And especially when we live overseas, like we being Hindus and living in Hong Kong, and I find that this is the case with many Indian people who live outside of India, they're more strict than the Indians who live in India, because if you grow up in India, then everybody around you is Hindu anyway, and you're going to fall in love with someone, you're going to get married. When you grow up outside of India, your parents are immediately worried that you're going to fall in love with somebody who's not a Hindu. So they do everything they can to prevent that from happening, because there aren't many people of our own culture around us. They want to do everything they can to prevent it from happening. So they try and push their kids to have an arranged marriage with somebody who shares the same cultural values.
And yet you were very independent, and even though you wanted to please your parents so much, you really did. You got engaged and you just couldn't go through with it. I don't blame you, but and that's your independent, and I think you're really, I mean, that independence really builds your character right there. That is magnificent. So but you suffered greatly because you had to break that engagement.
Yeah, I was ostracized from the community, and then I was made to feel that that nobody else would be willing to marry me, at least not within our culture. And what I'd done was, yeah, it was considered quite huge at that time.
So you being very independent, but at the same time you felt this tremendous burden of what you did, that you just were not necessarily to be respected. You didn't understand yourself.
Yeah, I think what I felt was that I felt, I guess, being independent is who I truly was. I mean, I was not the type of person who would naturally have been obedient and gone for an arranged marriage. But yet I felt that to be that way was wrong. I felt I was flawed because of who I am. I felt that I'm not supposed to be this way. Why am I this way? I'm not supposed to because it's not acceptable in my community. Other women are getting married and they're, you know, and they're being really good wives and good mothers to their children and they're staying home and they're happy with their lot. Why is it that I want so much more? Why is it that I want to travel and I don't want an arranged marriage and I don't want to stay at home and I want to go out and work and I want to do something exciting? And I felt I was wrong for being that way. So there was always, it was like this tug of war inside, like, do I do what's expected of me or do I follow my heart? But there seems to be something wrong with my heart and what my heart wants.
Yeah. So that ostracism that was placed on you really put a lot of stress on you and it affected your self-esteem about how you felt about yourself. Is that?
Hugely. But I think my self-esteem probably started to get affected when I was at school because I was a minority. I've always been a minority in my whole life. I mean, living in Hong Kong and being an Indian person in a Chinese country, being an Indian person in a British school, I've always felt like the outcast and I've always felt like I had to really work hard at trying to belong or trying to fit in. So I've spent my whole life trying to please people, trying to be liked, trying to fit in. And so I think my life started that way.
Yeah. Wow. So you did end up getting married, and it was to a man that you chose.
Wonderful man he is. And it just so happens that his parents are Indian and he's Hindu, but he's very he's very similar to me in that neither of us are actually practicing Hindus. Our parents are Hindus, but it just so happened that he also grew up in Hong Kong. He also rejected his parents' cultural values. They had tried to arrange marriages for him and he had said, no way, I'm going through with that. And he had told his parents that, I'm not even going to marry an Indian woman. And I had told my parents the same thing in the end. I said, I'm not going to marry an Indian guy because they're all rejecting me anyway because I've had this broken engagement. And then we met each other.
Out of the blue, through a friend, actually. And you met each other, and it was like something connected right then.
Right then, from the very first time, because it was just the way we connected and the way, I mean, he has this sense of humor and we were laughing about our culture. We were laughing about our parents. And it was the first time that I'd met an Indian man who actually found humor in my background, in my, you know, in everything I'd done, like my rejection of Indian cultural values and all that. It was the first time that I found that there was an Indian man who, instead of being horrified, he actually found it endearing, and he loved those things about me.
it sounds like a perfect match. I mean, the way that you describe it in your book, how wonderful! What a great love story. So let's take it forward. You were married how many years before you were diagnosed with cancer?
6 years.
6 years. And so tell us what happened when you were first diagnosed with cancer.
Well, prior to being diagnosed with cancer, actually about 7 or 8 months before I was diagnosed, my best friend was diagnosed with cancer. And so I was watching her deteriorate, like right up close. I was spending a lot of time with her. I mean, she was my absolute best friend. And several months after she was diagnosed, my husband's brother-in-law, my husband's younger sister's husband, was diagnosed with cancer. And both of them were deteriorating very rapidly. And both of them were being treated in the best cancer institutes with the best treatments that money can buy. And yet they were deteriorating fast. So when I had my diagnosis, I was absolutely shocked. I was in fear because I immediately saw it as a death sentence. I didn't see any other way.
Mm-hmm. So you actually fought the cancer for 4 years. I mean, truly, you were battling the cancer.
I was. I was battling it, and I was very fearful when my best friend passed away. The fear of my own cancer just magnified absolutely. I just felt that's going to be my fate as well. And then my husband's brother-in-law passed away. But I kept fighting. I kept fighting until, about 6 weeks before my near-death experience, I had a full body scan, and the doctor told my husband that I had maybe 3 months at best. And my husband didn't tell me. And this was the end of 2005. By this point, the cancer had spread throughout my entire lymphatic system. So it was like from the base of my skull all down my neck and down my chest and all the way down below my abdomen and under my arms. And so it had just completely spread. And my muscles were completely wasted. I weighed about 85 pounds. And I couldn't even hold my head up. You know, my head was like, it felt really heavy, like a bowling ball. I was ridden to a wheelchair because my muscles were completely wasted. I had open skin lesions. I was on an oxygen tank, a portable oxygen tank. I mean, I was really, really sick.
Yeah, it sounded like you're pretty miserable too.
Yeah, I was in a lot of discomfort. I had fluid in my lungs, so I couldn't breathe properly, and I had the oxygen tank, but I couldn't lie down flat. Every time I lied down, I would start choking because of the fluid in my lungs. So I always had to be propped up. And I had a full-time nurse caring for me at home. I didn't want to stay in the hospital. I would go in and out of the hospital for treatments, you know, and blood transfusions and things like that. But I never really wanted to stay there for more than one night. So I was staying at home most of the time, and I had a full-time nurse caring for me. And then one day on like February the 1st, it was February the 1st, 2006, and I kind of just felt it was just too difficult to go on. And I was so tired. I was worn out. I was tired. I was in a lot of discomfort and pain. And I told the nurse before she went off duty in the evening, I said, could I have an extra dose of morphine? Because I just want to sleep. I really want to sleep. I am so tired. I was miserable. And so she gave me a dose of morphine, and then she went off for the night. And then the next morning, I didn't wake up in bed, and I didn't wake up. And apparently my body had swollen. My face, my whole face was swollen, and my arms and my legs. And, you know, I was like completely, like grossly swollen. And so my husband got a real shock when he woke up and he saw me, and then he tried to wake me up, and I wouldn't open my eyes. And then he called the doctor right away, and I was still alive. My heart was beating, and, you know, I was still connected to the oxygen tank. So I was still alive, but I wouldn't open my eyes. So he called the doctor, and the doctor told him to rush me to the hospital right away. And this is a different hospital from the one I had previously been visiting. He told my husband to rush me to. It was like one of the biggest cancer hospitals in Hong Kong, you know, the most advanced one with the teams of specialists and everything. So my husband rushed me there. And, you know, and when we entered there, my doctor was there, and then there was a team of specialists there who were expecting me. And the first thing the oncologist said when she saw me was that, it's too late. You know, she saw me, and she had this, apparently she looked horrified, and she said, why have you brought her to us so late? It's too late. She can't be saved. She probably only has a few hours. She's all bloated. It means that her organs have already shut down. Her organs have stopped functioning. And the interesting thing was, I didn't even realize I was in a coma because I was aware of all of this.
You could hear them talk about you.
Yeah, I could hear, see, feel everything that was going on around me.
Where were you? Were you up here looking down?
You know, it's interesting. For me, it didn't feel as though I was focusing from one point. It sort of felt as if I just started to expand and like take over the whole space, like spilling out, just filling out until I just encompassed. So it was like I had 360 degree peripheral awareness. I was aware of everything that was going on all around at the same time.
Wow.
And it's quite difficult to express it in a sequential way, because everything seemed to be happening at the same time. And it was like time and space didn't matter. Time and space doesn't mean anything in that realm. But when I have to express it here in the physical, it's quite difficult because I have to put it into some kind of sequence. But in that realm, it was like it was actually not confusing. It felt, in fact, like I had this level of clarity that I've never experienced before. And so I was just aware of everything, from what the doctors were saying to my husband, what everybody was doing, what the procedures, what they were poking and prodding with their needles and the tubes, and they were taking fluid out of my lungs, and they put me through one of those scanning. They scanned my body to be able to see how, where the tumors were and everything. So they were doing all these things, and I was aware of every single thing. And even the conversations they were having outside the room and down the corridor, I was aware of everything.
Wow. So how did it make you feel when they said that it's too late?
It didn't faze me, because I was feeling amazing. I was feeling ecstatic, like I was light and free, and it was like, it was nothing like I had ever experienced before. I felt as though for the first time that my struggle was over and I'd finally come home, that I was somewhere where I belonged.
Wow.
Yeah, and I felt like I was encompassed by what I can only describe as unconditional love, but even the word love is just not strong enough, because it was a feeling that I never experienced in this life ever before. So it was, and it was really, I mean, it was really unconditional, in that I knew it was mine no matter what. No matter what I had ever done, this love was mine. It was even anything that I could have perceived to have done wrong, I wasn't judged for it. It was all I felt was compassion, that whatever I did wrong was just done out of the limitation and the fear of living through a physical body. So there was just compassion. There was no judgment.
How wonderful. Gosh. Yeah. So what happened then? What happened after what happened in your experience to make you come back?
After that, I then sensed the presence of my father, who had deceased 10 years before, and my best friend, who I lost to cancer. And at the time when my friend was deteriorating, when she was still alive, because I had cancer, I had stopped going over to see her, because it was just too difficult for me to deal with, you know, watching her deteriorate and knowing that I was going to go through the same thing because I had cancer. So I stopped going to see her. And then when she passed away, I felt a lot of guilt about that. But when I saw her in the other realm, I mean, all I felt from her was unconditional love. There was nothing. There was just understanding and compassion. And in that realm, I knew that everything I did, it was just out of the limitations that I felt through fear of what was happening with her. There was no judgment. And the same with my father. all I felt from him in that realm was just unconditional love. There was no more of the feelings of the cultural oppression of disagreeing with him and defying him when he wanted me to have an arranged marriage, and all that was gone. It's just, it doesn't exist in the other realm. And I understood that our cultures and all the cultural conditioning and everything like guilt and all these things are part of our conditioning here. We don't carry it with us over there.
Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. So what was the next step after that?
Then I actually started to understand things like why I got the cancer, and I started to understand, I could see my life as a tapestry, and I could see how I got to where I was right now, and I could see how we were all interconnected. It was like I just understood this, the reasons why I was where I was right at that moment in time. And then I also felt a level of connection with everybody, like everybody in the physical that was treating me, but also with my father and my best friend. And I just felt that we were all, it was like we were all one. It was like I became them. And even the people who were treating me, the doctors, the nurses, I felt that I just understood everything they were feeling. I could feel their sense of hopelessness. I could feel my husband's anguish at the thought of losing me, my mother who was right there, my brother who was on a plane coming to see me. I could just feel exactly what they were feeling, as though my consciousness merged with theirs. And it's as though we're all connected. And then I also started to understand that we are magnificent and amazing beings, and I realized that I had never known this when I was in my physical body, that what a magnificent and an amazing being that I was, that had come to express myself in physical life. And I had never known this. I'd always forsaken myself and been smaller than who I was meant to be. And for the first time, I realized we're not supposed to do this. We're supposed to be everything that we are. We're supposed to be as much ourselves as we possibly can. And then I reached a point where I felt that this was as far as I could go, and I couldn't go any further. And if I went further, I couldn't turn back. And my father communicated to me that this is as far as you can go, and it's not your time. It's not your time to die, but you still have the choice. If you want to go back into physical life, you can go, but if you want to go onward into death, you can go that way. So it's still your choice, even though it's not your time. And at first, I didn't want to go back into my physical body. I mean, who wants to go back into a dying and sick body? And I felt that life was just too difficult, and not just difficult for me, but it was difficult for my family dealing with a sick person taking care of me. But then as soon as I made that decision that I didn't want to come back, immediately it was like I then understood that now that I knew the truth of who I am, I wouldn't have the cancer anymore if I chose to go back. And then, as if to sort of confirm that realization, both my best friend and my father impressed upon me that now that you know the truth of who you are, go back and live your life fearlessly.
Oh, how beautiful. And you did. So you came back.
Yeah. So
were you healed immediately when you came back, or did you had no cancer in you, or, wow.
Well, what actually happened is that when I started to wake up, when I started to open my eyes, everybody was astounded that I was opening my eyes, and they didn't think I would open my eyes, and my brother was there, he just got off a plane, my mom, my mom, my husband, and then they called the doctor, and the doctor was really astounded. And I recognized the doctor right away. I said, "Oh, good afternoon, Dr. Chan." And he said, "How do you recognize me?" So he was really astounded by that, because I had never seen him before until entering the hospital when I was in a coma the previous day. So I was in the coma for about 30 hours. And so they were all really, really astounded. But still, they were cautious. They still thought maybe I've come out of the coma, but, you know, they still thought my body was ridden with cancer.
Right.
But I was very, very groggy in the beginning. But as I started to come out of it, like a few hours later that night or the following morning, I started to tell everyone, "I'm going to be fine. Don't worry about me. I'm healed." So they were saying that, you know, like, "No, you know, like, yes, dear, but stay in bed." And I kept saying, "No, I know I'm healed." So I was concerned. I was healed. I knew I was healed, but I knew that my body just had to catch up. And I knew that physically the results were going to show very, very quickly, because in that moment, lying in the bed, I was still completely emaciated. I still had the open skin lesions, and, you know, I still weighed about 80 pounds and everything. But within 4 days, my tumors had shrunk by 70%.
Oh, my.
And so they moved me from the intensive care unit to the regular room. And I was off the oxygen machine. They removed the food tubes because I had been receiving nutrition through tubes. So they removed the food tubes. I started eating solid food. And they had told me that because I had these big open skin lesions, and they had said that when you get your strength up in a few weeks, we can do some reconstructive surgery to close up the skin lesions, because they said you don't have enough nutrition in your body to heal those on your own. But I never even needed the reconstructive surgery. The lesions healed on their own. Within 3 weeks, they couldn't even find a tumor in my body to suggest cancer. They wanted to do a biopsy. They couldn't even find a lymph node in my body that was big enough to suggest cancer. And within 5 weeks, I was out of the hospital. They sent me home.
Wow. What did your doctor say about that?
Now, the doctor was he didn't know what to write in my medical file, but he was quite conservative about it. And he just said, he was blown away. He was absolutely blown away. But he kind of said, "Okay, sometimes these things happen. You know, cancer is like that." But then
spontaneous remission. Yeah.
Spontaneous remission. But then what happened is that, because I had a lot of trouble integrating back into regular life, because I didn't know what to do with my life. I hadn't worked for a few years, and it didn't feel normal going back to work, because I was just different now. I thought differently. Everything was different. So my husband told me to just write about my experience, just to get it out of my system. And so I started doing that. I just started writing about it. And then my brother found a near-death experience forum or a website. And he gave me the link, and he said, "Have her look at some of these." So I looked and I thought, wow, these are pretty similar. I'd never really heard of near-death experiences before. So it was the first time I was being exposed to something like this. And I thought, this is weird. Other people have these things happen too. And then there was this button to click where it said, "Have you had an experience of your own? Click here." So I clicked the button, and then I'd been writing. So I copied and pasted my experience onto the form and sent it. And then I got a response right away from the person who owned the site, who said, "Wow, this is one of the most remarkable NDEs that we've ever received." And I hadn't even given my real name. I just put Anita M. So they then titled it Anita M's NDE. So very shortly after that, my experience started to go viral. People who were reading it started to tell other people, and then they would link it in their emails and or post it on their Facebook. And so a lot of people started to read it. And they nobody still knew who I was. They just started to read it as Anita M's NDE. And an oncologist based here in the U.S., somebody gave him the link. In fact, two different people gave him the link to my story. And so because he got it twice, he then decided to read it. And so he was really blown away by the story. But he's an oncologist. He's a skeptic. So he didn't believe it at first. So he got in touch with the people who own the website and told them, can they contact me? He really wants to get a hold of me and talk to me. So they did. And he called me from the U.S. And he started asking me some questions. And he still said, it's really hard to believe. Would you mind sending me some of your medical test results? And I said, sure, I don't mind at all. So I started sending him some of the stuff, the results that the doctors had given me. And he called me up and he said, it's really unbelievable. It's actually quite scary. He said, whichever way I look at it, you should be dead.
Well, and, thank you, doctor.
Yeah, and he was so intrigued that he actually flew to Hong Kong to go to the hospital where this happened so that he could speak to the people there and confirm it and so that he could look through my medical records. And so he went through, he scrutinized my medical records, he photocopied the pages he wanted, and he actually wrote up a report for me to reproduce in my book. He told me, you should write a book. And he said, let me write this for you so that nobody ever challenges you.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was quite incredible.
In your book, you wrote, let me get this, because it was the basis for healing, I believe. It was so beautifully written. While I was in a state of clarity in the other realm, I instinctively understood that I was dying because of all of my fears. I wasn't expressing my true self because my worries were preventing me from doing so. I understood that the cancer was not a punishment or anything like that. It was just my own energy. I love this. Manifesting as cancer because my fears weren't allowing me to express myself as the magnificent force I was meant to be. That is incredible. How perfectly put.
Thank you. And that is the truth. We are all just supposed to be the magnificent force we are meant to be. And that's all.
And that's what you realized while you were over there. And that's what healed. You also said that you realized that you did a lot of forgiveness work while you were fighting the cancer. And you forgave the world, but there was one person that you forgot to forgive, and that was yourself.
And that was me. Yeah. Yeah, because when I was fighting the cancer, I was reading all kinds of things, and you know, I was forgiving myself, I was meditating, I was doing all these things. And this is the one key element which I feel is really missing, is that people still, no matter what we do, it doesn't matter. We can, you know, we can forgive ourselves, we can meditate, we can work with the law of attraction, but until we love ourselves, nothing's going to work.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, chills down my back. That's exactly it. You are so right. And, you know, we literally are so blessed that you went through all of that pain and everything, but the message to all of us are a couple of things. One, to forgive ourselves, to love ourselves, and especially don't be afraid of dying.
Yes, and don't be afraid of being yourself.
And of living.
And of living joyfully. When you love yourself, you choose to live joyfully, then every time you make your choices, you make your choices out of the joy of life and the joy of loving yourself, rather than making our choices out of fear of displeasing people, fear of doing the wrong thing, fear of looking bad, or fear of getting sick, or fear of ill health. We tend to fear ill health more than we actually revere good health. You know, we don't respect our health. Instead, we fear getting bad health.
That is so true. It's so backward, isn't it?
It's totally backward. That's
wow.
Exactly it. It's really backward. So we fear that we're going to get sick. And then when we go to the doctor or the hospital, our medical systems and the medical diagnostic tools, they're all created to look for illness. But no time in our life does anybody teach us how to live healthily. And everything is just geared towards finding what's wrong. Everything we do. It's always about not doing the wrong thing or finding out what's wrong. It's never about, let's all do what's right for us or what's good for us or what's fun or what brings us joy or what makes us feel whole.
Well, the message today to everybody is that to learn how to love and appreciate ourselves and everything around us, just to live in joy. And that in itself will bring us the good health and the thriving that we so deserve.
Yes, absolutely.
Anita, I can't thank you enough for coming on and sharing your wonderful story. I again want to show everybody your book. This is truly an inspiration. If you want to feel good, if you want to appreciate life, you need to get this book. It is a fantastic, and you are truly a blessing to this world. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on the show.
And thank you, and good luck. And you are touring now the U.S.?
Yes, well, I'm kind of following Wayne Dyer, and Wayne Dyer has been an amazing mentor for me on this. And so I was just speaking with him in San Jose, and then in a couple of weeks I'll be speaking in Atlanta as his guest.
Fabulous. You guys make a great couple. Two people I really respect. Thank you so much.
Yeah, he's great.
And again, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
And to all my wonderful listeners out there, have a great day. Live life in joy and health and love yourself. And we'll see you next week. Bye-bye. Thanks so much for sharing your energy with us today. We will be back with another great show next week on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. If you would like to see a video of this broadcast, go to loaradionetwork.com/jewels.html or send an email to jewels@loaradionetwork.com.